Columbus's greatest attractions is its Center of Science and Industry, which most of us know as COSI. It's rated one of the nation's top science museums. And at the first of this year, it welcomed a new leader. Dr. Frederick Bertley is a nationally known scientist, educator, and maybe most importantly, communicator. Today he joins Farm Bureau's exec, Adam Sharp, to talk about science and helping more of us understand science and be comfortable with it. It's all about the science on Town Hall, Ohio.
This is Town Hall, Ohio, home to interesting people, engaging issues, and enlightening stories. Town Hall, Ohio is a production of the Ohio Farm Bureau Federation, working to forge a partnership between farmers and consumers, and is supported by Nationwide. Nationwide is on your side. Now, here's Town Hall, Ohio host, Joe Corneli.
Dr. Frederick Bertley has a long and impressive resume. Now, here's a very condensed version. He's worked in academia, including being a professor at Harvard's Medical School and a research affiliate at MIT. He's been employed at a pharmaceutical company, a major law firm, and was a leader at a leading science institution. He has worked internationally on human health issues, and he gives keynotes and speeches at little-known places like the United Nations, the White House, the National Academy of Sciences, Wharton School of Business, and other distinguished institutions. And to cap off his career today, he's a guest on Town Hall, Ohio. Dr. Bertley, welcome to the show.
Joe, thank you so much. And this is the capstone of my career, so thank you for having me on.
Were you listening to that, boss?
Absolutely. Yeah, it's good to hear.
So we're going to talk science today. And I read a recent article by Carrie Gose in Columbus Business First, and she described what Dr. Bertley does as science evangelism. We're going to get into that a lot today, but before that, introduce folks, if you would, Dr. Bertley, to the Center of Science and Industry, to COSI.
Yeah, so COSI is a beloved gem for the Columbus and greater Columbus community. I mean, it's a wonderful science center, and the reason why it's such a gem is we have programmatic stuff, both our exhibits that are on the floor, as well as things we do outside the building that are for everybody. We like to talk about bringing science to everyone from the womb to the tomb. And the reason why that's so important is it makes, you know, we make it accessible, fun, and enjoyable.
Have you had your kids down there, Adam?
Oh my gosh, yes. Growing up here in Central Ohio, I visited COSI quite a bit in its old location, its former location downtown for many years as a kid. And then, of course, growing up and moving back to the community, as one of the first things we did was actually my wife and I bought a membership and took our kids to COSI, especially all during the wintertime. It was a great time to have things for them to do inside. And then as the weather got warm, to move outside and do things at COSI. So, yeah, we've enjoyed it for many years.
So calling it one of the top science museums in America isn't just hype. I got that rating from Mensa, which is, most people know, the Society of Brilliant People. Go a little bit more into the mission. You said bringing science to people, but describe that more, please.
Yeah, I mean, when you think of, and I think, Joe, we're going to get into this, Adam, a little bit later in the show around science literacy. But if you think about how we exist today, we're in this radio studio. I mean, everything we're doing in here has been made possible through science and technology. If you want to wake up tomorrow morning, see if you can get through the day without specifically being impacted by science technology. First thing we do is pull up our cell phone, look to see what was tweeted or what messages we received, right? Or if you go and eat some food out the fridge, unless you shop religiously at Trader Joe's or Whole Foods, it's been genetically modified, and we can get into that too, good or bad. You know, you use your GPS, that's all science-based. The clothes we wear, you put on your clothes, material scientists and engineers have spent millions and millions to try to figure out how it's stain-resistant. Everything we do is impacted by science and technology, yet the bulk of us don't know much about it. And as great as Ohio State is, and Capital, and Autobahn, and Miami, and forgive me if I didn't name your alma mater out there, folks, but or MIT or Princeton, you're not going to go to those research centers to learn about science. In walks a place like COSI. It's a place that can break down a lot of these difficult science ideas and engineering things and make it accessible to everybody. And we do it in a fun and engaging way. And so when Mensa says we're top 10 science center industry, or when Parent Magazine votes us number one science center for families, or Ohio Museums ranks us number one, et cetera, it's really meaningful to us because we're connecting to people in a way and in an arena that most people are foreign and scared about science.
Adam, that makes me think, you know, most people, when they think of farmers, they think of work ethic. They think of being a self-starter. They think of putting in long, hard days. They don't think about the science of food and fiber production.
Yeah, the science of food and fiber production is what it is. That the world that we work in to produce food for Ohio, for the world, is something that involves an enormous amount of science, whether we're talking about equipment and technology, whether we're talking about the weather and trying to get a gauge on the weather. Now, you know, this morning, one of the first things any farmer does, right, is get up and look at the weather. Mm-hmm. And the more advanced we can be in understanding weather, and even now, law requires certain practices based around weather and weather patterns, nutrient management and environmental side of things, animal care, food science, mm-hmm. food safety, regulatory environment. All of these pieces are very much involved in how agriculture has to operate today.
Adam Sharp is Executive Vice President of Ohio Farm Bureau. Our special guest is Dr. Frederick Burtley, President and CEO of the Center of Science and Industry. You use the term, and I want to explore it more, science literacy. Mm-hmm. It's my contention that, well, you're absolutely right. We don't think about it. And sometimes when we do think about science, I don't want to say we're wrong, but we may have misperceptions.
Sure.
How would you define a scientifically literate person?
You know, it's I'll frame it this way. You're expected to read and write. Or in America, we're expected to read or write, period. If you're illiterate, you know, it's not a thing you're comfortable with, you know, et cetera. There could be shame attached to it. No one expects you to be William Shakespeare or Maya Angelou or the best literary genius, but you're still expected to read or write. It's same thing with counting. We're supposed to know how to count. We're supposed to know how to do our times table. No one expecting you to be Albert Einstein or Benjamin Banneker, you know, these amazing mathematicians, but you're still expected to count. For some reason, in Western society today and in the U.S., it's okay to have no understanding of anything science. In fact, sometimes it's a badge of honor. Oh, you know, I'm slow in science, or I was never good for that. And it's an interesting kind of paradigm we've set up for our society, because it's already from out the womb or from early childhood, you know, it's okay if you're not good in science or you're not comfortable in science. That's okay. You can do something else. And I'm not saying someone should be everyone has to be a PhD scientist. But I am saying, as a public, we need to be more literate. I mean, you talked about the farming community and the agricultural society. I mean, you couldn't find better or more long-lived scientists than farmers. You know, we have these stereotypes that a scientist needs to have a lab coat and thick glasses and be in a lab. But think about how the agricultural, I mean, you mentioned all the different ways that the ag community has moved forward. It's because of science. You plant something, it grows well, it doesn't grow well, you write fastidious notes, you come back the next season, you plant again. And then when you talk about genetically modified stuff, I mean, farmers and nature has been doing that for millennia. There's nothing new there. And so, you know, just getting people to appreciate that there's science and so many more things that they're typically not thinking about, and that you should be comfortable learning some stuff around science.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, you mentioned a couple of those examples, and it's fascinating now when you just look at just in our world, in agriculture, but rapidly, when we talk with our business community here in mm-hmm. Ohio, for example, the commonality we typically go to is science and engineering. So whether mm-hmm. I'm talking with small business groups, retailers, the manufacturers, educators,
yeah.
Any of these fields across Ohio and across the country, of course, rapidly our commonality, and even with our government regulatory friends,
sure.
our quick conversation goes to science and engineering. And what are solutions? What are efficiencies? What are ways to build a better product? What are ways to build a better business? And rapidly, right, that's science and technology innovation.
And I love how you said that, Adam. I mean, what's so important about that is a lot of times you're speaking to elected officials, Congress or senators, and those are the people that are ultimately writing a lot of the laws that allow us to do what we're doing, whether it's science and engineering. And so imagine that whole blanket of folks not being science literate. I mean, that could be a problem. So making sure, again, we're not expecting our congressmen and women and senators to be PhD scientists in agriculture or engineering, but it'd be great if they knew a little bit about it if they're making these big decisions and writing laws.
Well, you mentioned that the bar is pretty low in terms of expectations of science knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
So if you were going to create that bar, give me 2, 3, 4, maybe 10 things that the most basically science literate person should know or maybe be able to do.
I mean, that's Joe, thank you so much for that question. I'll give you, you asked for 2, 3, 10. I'll give you maybe 3. One is, in this great country, the greatest country on the planet, we still have one quarter, 25% of Americans still think that the sun revolves around the earth and the earth is the center of the universe. Joe, I'm seeing your frown and complete shock. This is done, by the way, these studies have been done by the National Science Foundation, UDOT.gov. There are all these studies looking at the level of the average American person. Can you imagine that? All right. Okay. So you look at things like, we're so excited, and we'll talk about this later, how COSI is bringing dinosaurs to the Columbus community. We're really excited about that. It's a partnership with the American Museum of Natural History. And there are populations of folks, actually 41%, almost half of Americans believe that humans and dinosaurs coexisted. You know, now I give a pass there. I grew up in the 70s, and I watched a lot of Hanna-Barbera and Fred Flintstones, and he used to go to the quarry every day and get on the back of a dinosaur and dig out rocks. But no, they didn't coexist. But more importantly, and why it can become even more relevant, because you could say, okay, well, who cares if dinosaurs coexisted or not? How about this? I don't know if this happened to you, but it's happened to me. I've gone to the doctor. The doctor says, well, you know, I think you have a viral infection. I'm like, okay, bummer. And they say, well, we're going to give you a prescription. The doctor writes a prescription for antibiotics. We then go to the pharmacy, we hand in a prescription, the pharmacist gives us a bunch of pills, says take 3 a day, etc. Well, the doctor, who he or she went to medical school, allegedly, is giving you an antibiotic. Meanwhile, they're telling you they think you have a viral infection. Well, antibiotics are antibacterial. They have no use whatsoever to fight a viral infection. And now in these hospitals around the world, including in this great city, people are getting these terrible infections with multi-drug resistant, antibiotic resistant bacteria because of the misuse and overprescription of antibiotics. And so that's a real example where our healthcare system is, you know, from a fee standpoint, going through the roof trying to figure out how to deal with this. And a lot of people are getting sick unnecessarily.
So the concepts that help us figure out what many people seem to think are fairly simple, but you're telling me they aren't. The concepts of how you go about helping people become more scientifically literate. Where do you start?
Yeah, I think you start from the very young. I mean, the odd thing about it, and Adam, you talked about your young kids going to COSI. Children come out of their mothers completely curious. They're scientists by nature. That's how they learn to talk. They're hearing all these adults say all this noise. They don't understand. They keep trying, iterating, practicing. All of a sudden, they learn to say mama, dada, and they start learning to speak. That's how they learn to walk. They lean on something, they fall over, it's a constant trial and error process. And that's what science is all about. And so where do you start? Kids are already born curious. Ask any kid, put them out in the yard. They're playing, they're exploring, that's what they do. But then somewhere along the kind of elementary school, middle school, it's like science is hard. And then unless you have a teacher that likes you or a parent that's forcing you or whatever, you can easily get routed off. And so where we start, I think we start with this great radio show and just getting people to understand that, you know, media can play a great role in saying that science is important. Just appreciate it. Have fun with it. And anybody who's learned a scientific phenomenon hasn't been let down. They get excited.
We're going to learn more about helping us all become more scientifically literate as we continue our conversation with the president and CEO of COSI, Dr. Frederick Burtley, Adam Sharp, the Ohio Farm Bureau in as well. We'll be back right after this.
Elastic tubes and bots and bands, bits and pieces and magic from the hand. We're making weird science, things we've never seen before. Behind bolted doors, talent and imagination, weird science.
Welcome back to Town Hall, Ohio. Our topic is science and science literacy with Dr. Frederick Burtley. He's the president and CEO of the Center of Science and Industry, COSI, here in Central Ohio. Adam Sharp, executive vice president of the Ohio Farm Bureau, in with us as well. I saw you perk up, Adam, when Frederick mentioned a little bit ago the need for our policymakers, either legislators or regulators, to have a pretty good grasp of how science works.
Yeah, science is absolutely key in our regulatory agencies, in our government, state and national. It's absolutely key. And as Joe knows, in a former role, I worked at the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency for a number of years over top of an office that regulates the country's chemicals, both industrial chemicals and pesticides and biotechnology. And that was an office of 900 scientists and about 100 lawyers. You always got to have your lawyer. But about 900 scientists.
And you had the right balance, though.
That's right.
The 900 to 100.
Yeah, it was definitely the right balance. And that's what you want to have. You have 900 scientists there who are evaluating every day things like the pesticides that farmers use, the biotechnology that farmers use, food safety if you're at the FDA, animal science and animal care and animal health if you're at USDA, environmental nutrient management, pieces like this, air quality, climate change, all of these things and how they impact agriculture, how agriculture impacts these things, and how to make sure that the government regulatory standards are set in the right place. So that you can do business in the best way that you can do and protect the environment or protect the animals or grow the best food you can grow and the most efficiently. So all of the things are absolutely critical as part of the state and federal government that we have. And science is critical in that.
Absolutely. And Adam, I'm glad you mentioned along that whole list, you talked about the FDA as well. I had the pleasure of going to one of their main campuses just outside Philadelphia. And just like your institution, you know, it had a preponderance of scientists. And it's amazing. You have these hundreds and hundreds of scientists that are studying all the foods we ingest every day, ladies and gentlemen, making sure they're safe, making sure they're good for all of us and our young ones. And it's science that makes all of that come alive. And you talked about earlier, Joe, you know, why is this so important? Well, another reason is jobs. I mean, you mentioned 900 where you were, the FDA, you know, full, and these are not necessarily PhD scientists. You can have a bachelor's degree or even a community college degree in a technical field, but you get real jobs that, you know, can really solve lots of problems.
So we've talked about the fact that we're lacking in terms of scientific literacy. Talk, Dr. Burtley, if you would, a little bit about another end of that spectrum. It's not that we don't grasp or want to understand science. There seems to be a movement that simply refuses to pay attention to science. They don't care what the facts are. They have a mindset, whether it's on their food or their politics or whatever, that science doesn't even come into their personal decision-making equation.
I mean, Joe, that's a great point. And that gets back to what we talked about, where some people just kind of turn off that science meter early on in life and they decide they're not a scientist. It's not easy for them. And so it just, as you said, doesn't come in their calculus. But it's important to realize that you know, science is an actual process. And I know there's a, you know, the term facts and real facts and not real facts is a fun term in the media, but from a scientific perspective, it's important that your listeners understand that science is just a process of asking a question, then doing research of any kind, whatever the field is, collecting that information and making a best guess after that. And I say that because a lot of people say, oh, science is facts. That's not true. Facts, believe it or not, and this will be a hot button, but facts change. For example, 4,000 years ago, all the best scientists in the world thought the world was flat. Why? Because when they looked out at the horizon and when they did measuring and walking, the experience at the human level made you think that it was flat. And so the data we had at that time, along comes Copernicus, realizes, wait a minute, it's actually round and the Earth is revolving. And so now we know that the Earth is round. And so facts in science will change, but the point is they will change through the democratic process of anybody challenging, asking questions, but bringing reproducible data. So it's not that, oh, I just showed something and okay, now the world is triangular because Dr. Frederick Burtley from COSI said it is. No, it's got to, you know, be upheld to that whole investigative process. And that's why science is cool. And so people should feel more comfortable about that, because when you're making a decision to buy a car, right, most people, they may not think they're scientists, but what do? They go to 3 and 4 car dealerships, they check 5 or 6 websites, they look at all these things, and they compare them, and then they make a best educated guess. And so many people are even practicing the behavior of science yet claiming that's not for them. And it's interesting.
It's interesting, too, right now. And Congressman Turner here in Ohio just last week had a great speech in Washington with Ohio State University. And he mentioned, hey, we got some great scientists from here in Ohio, the Wright brothers, you know, as they were developing, aircraft. And they talked about how more and more right now we have this debate around science where people want to try to go find science or conduct science to prove they're right.
Yeah.
Or to prove somebody else is wrong versus in his message was doing science for science. And it's okay too, right? If the test fails or if the test shows you that what your hypothesis was wrong, because that just challenges you to keep doing it again, right? And look for the right answers, look for the real facts, right? Look for the science.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I really appreciate what you said. This idea of failing fast. I mean, Dean Kamen, the country's greatest engineer, he's the person behind the Segway and water purification machines. He has 450 patents. He has this big sign on this big company that says, fail fast, fail often. And I love that. It's about exploring, getting information, and keeping it moving.
That's right.
So the Center for Center of Science and Industry in Ohio, in Columbus, Ohio, better known as COSI, has lots of really cool exhibits. We heard Adam talk about some of the things he saw when he was younger and taking his kids there. We've been there. Lots of neat things to see and do. That's where we're going next as we continue visiting with the relatively new president and CEO of COSI, Dr. Frederick Burtley. Also with us today, Adam Sharp, Executive Vice President of Ohio Farm Bureau. We take you inside COSI next on Town Hall Ohio. Helping young people understand the world around them, that's one part of the mission of the Center of Science and Industry, and its CEO and President, Frederick Burtley, is with us on the show today. Adam Sharp of the Ohio Farm Bureau Federation, and we've been talking about science and literacy and so on, but you put it on display at COSI. For folks that may have missed it at the top of the show, real quick, what's COSI? What do you do?
So COSI is a great, what's called a hands-on informal science center. Basically, it's a science museum with really cool stuff for everyone. And so you come in, and the thing that distinguishes us as a science museum from an art museum, for example, and I love art, so this is not denigrating anything, but an art museum, you walk in, and you look, and you keep moving, and you look, and you keep moving. Whereas in the science museums, you actually interact with the exhibits. And education, I love the little soundtrack you had just now, Joe. Education has taught us that when you interact with something, if you press a button, feel something, get scared, have that kind of interactive experience, you'll actually learn something much better and much easier for a longer period of time. And that's what you can expect at COSI. Lots of fun stuff all around science and engineering for everyone. It's not just for kids. We got great stuff for young adults and, of course, older populations as well.
Location, hours, all of that is it COSI.com or .org? COSI.org is the website to go to. So when I went there to get prepared for today's show, Frederick, one of the first things I saw, the dinosaurs are coming. This is a pretty big deal.
I mean, absolutely. You know, we have the pleasure at a place like COSI to bring some really fun, interactive exhibitions. But there are things that really grab the belly of everybody on the planet. Two in particular, space and exploration. So we have a program called You Be the Astronaut. It's coming soon, Be the Astronaut. That's May 27th to September 4th. But then even more excited than that, to your point, Joe, come November, around mid-November, we will have dinosaurs as part of a natural history museum in partnership with AMNH, which is based in New York City.
So what kind of things are just roughly are we going to see? I imagine that...
And bony. So come through and see these huge skeletal structures. But not just really cool things. And it's important to understand, these are real artifacts. They've been dug up from places in the United States and South America, around the world. And you're going to see how massive these structures are. And then you'll see the whole kind of natural history museum space and different things that speak to that and that period of when we had dinosaurs roaming this great planet.
So besides it being very cool, what do we learn from all of this effort that goes into finding the fossils, finding the Tyrannosaurus Rex and reconstructing it at COSI or where? Why do we do this?
There's two big reasons. One is from a cool, kind of awesome, awestruck perspective. When you see how large, I mean, a lot of us have pets, cats, dogs. I mean, imagine having a Tyrannosaurus Rex on a leash, right? I mean, again, we didn't live there at the same time, so you couldn't have that. But they're just wondrous species. And so regardless of what side you sit on the religious aisle, you can't help but be blown away by how almost majestic and intimidating these animals are. And what that does is it sparks your curiosity, which leads us to the other reason why these things are so important, is that it's all about putting, you know, the human experience in perspective and learning all about nature and the laws of nature and the phenomena of nature and creatures that roll this earth with us. I mean, it's just, it really helps open your lens and make you excited about the fact that we breathe oxygen and are alive and well.
So it's not probably quite as exciting nor as big as a T-Rex, but for the last number of years, I should have checked, our Franklin County Farm Bureau, with some Ohio Farm Bureau help, has brought in some pretty big stuff too. Combines, tractors, they call it Farm Days at COSI, and again, I don't know if it's going to attract the crowds that the dinosaurs are, but it's a pretty popular event.
Yeah, Farm Days, little seeds and big tractors has typically been the theme, and there's some pretty big equipment that comes in there. And, yep, we always get very good feedback on it through the Farm Bureau, and are happy to do it. And introduce, you know, kids to, I think, the dynamic side of science that's happening daily in a farmer's field or in the barn or in the greenhouse around protecting the honeybees or the biodynamic insides of a greenhouse and all the things that are happening, whether it's, you know, whether you're talking about tractors now that email you when they have a problem, you know, and it'll email your equipment dealer and you and tell you, oh, hey, something's not quite right. Or the robotic milkers now that automatically milk the cows 24/7 and the farmer's just checking it on his iPad and making sure things are running smooth. Whether it's the sensors and the data and the information we collect from satellites or from drone technology and apply that into the field. All these different things are something that's dynamic about science and will be part of that exhibit, of course, when we're just talking about and introducing folks to the world of food and agriculture.
I mean, Joe, go ahead.
After you.
Yeah, I mean, Adam, thank you for saying all of that. It's fantastic. It's from August 9th to August 13th, and it gets back to what we were talking about, Joe, earlier on the show, that you know, science is everywhere, and especially in the ag kind of farming community. And those examples you talked about are so important. You think about someone like Louis Pasteur that revolutionized our industry, pasteurization. Well, he was a scientist. And so to your point, Adam, you know, having folks, kids and families, seeing that connection between something like COSI and Farm Days and these farming equipment machines really makes it come alive for everyone, especially the younger folks, to say, wow, I could be an engineer, I could be a farmer, I could be both. And what better way to experience that than come to COSI?
So if you'd like to learn more about the dinosaur exhibits or Farm Days, you can get it all at COSI.org. That's the website. We'll be back to talk more with COSI's president, Dr. Frederick Burtley, and Adam Sharp of Ohio Farm Bureau when we continue on Town Hall Ohio.
It's poetry in motion. She turned a tender eye to me. Deep as any ocean. Sweet as any harmony. She blinded me with science.
Welcome back to Town Hall, Ohio. Our guest is the president and CEO of COSI, the Center of Science and Industry, Dr. Frederick Burtley. Adam Sharp's executive vice president of Ohio Farm Bureau. Dr. Burtley, you started, what, first of the year, I think, calendar
year? That's correct.
Year. So how have you found Columbus so far?
First of all, I want to say, Joe and Adam, I thought I had the best job by accepting the presidency and CEO-ship of COSI, but clearly your engineer and DJs who are putting together the soundtrack for the show have the dream job. I mean, I'm loving the music. How things, I mean, I got to tell you, I spent a lot of time, I'm actually born in Montreal, Canada. I'm so raised in Canada, but spent 12 years or so in Boston, another 9 years in Philadelphia, spent some time in New York. And, you know, the Northeast is a very interesting place. And you grow up hearing about the Midwestern ethic, you know, ethic of care and values. And I've moved here, and my wife and I could not be happier by how the Central Ohio and the Ohio community in general has embraced us. I mean, we've been pinching ourselves, but we realize it's not a dream. People are really nice. So it's been fantastic onboarding here.
So as I read up on what brought you to Ohio, and you've got a very impressive resume, I'm guessing you didn't take the job because you had to. Let's just put it that way. But you said one of the things that did attract you was this whole Scioto Peninsula area. And Central Ohioans will know it, but it's right along the Scioto River. It's a part of the downtown Columbus area that has been underdeveloped over the years. You're looking forward to being a part of fixing that.
Sure. And you know, you think about there are many cities, of course, throughout Ohio. But if you think about Cleveland and Cincinnati, they're much older cities. And you have a city like Columbus. And whether you know about the Scioto Peninsula or what we've been calling the People's Peninsula, what's happening in this central region is massive development. And for me to be relatively mid-career person, to be part of a city that's already in a great place, obviously Columbus is a great city, but really on a vertical transition through this development of the Seattle Peninsula. So COSI is there. We're having the National Veterans Memorial Museum right next to COSI. You have development happening right there. And this is all part of the growing downtown region of Columbus. So that was a really big attractant to me, to be part of a city that many people, many different industries, including the ag community and the farming community, are working together to get to the next level. To be part of that is just exciting.
I want to move on to a different subject. Hopefully folks who may not have even thought about science are just slightly more enthused about it after listening today. And maybe you're a grandparent or a parent that's thinking, you know, this might be where my kids could be headed. Adam, one of the things that we've talked about, we've had leadership in here from the National FFA and our state president. FFA, ag education as a whole, it's a way to attract people who might have a leaning towards science into agricultural science.
Well, yeah, several areas, right? So 4-H through OSU Extension, our 4-H programs across the state, that's what they do. You know, they're teaching the scientific process, and so many of the projects that kids take through 4-H from the time they're 9, you know, through high school. Ag education, same thing in FFA. They're teaching science now 7th grade through 12. So lots of dynamic activity in youth in 4-H and in ag ed through FFA, but also STEM academies. And we saw one spring up here, right, a couple years ago now. Springfield, that's focused, the Global Impact STEM Academy is focused on agriculture and food, and it's right downtown Springfield and reaching a different market. You get a whole mix of kids who are coming into that program that have both an interest in science, an interest in food, an interest in engineering, and looking for a career in this larger space. So great ways developing here in our state, some traditional, some new, to get K through 12 kids involved in science.
How else do we do that? We've got an infrastructure in agriculture between 4-H and FFA. What about elsewhere?
I mean, first of all, I just want to underscore, Adam, how what you're telling the listeners is absolutely outstanding. I mean, you think about science and technology, and okay, maybe you want to go to Mars, and maybe you want to be an engineer, but what are the most important things that impact all of us? Food and health, right? And so you're talking about science and engineering and STEM academies all related to food. And so, you know, for the parents and grandparents out there, it's such an obvious connection for your young ones to get interested in this, because we all love to eat, you know, and it's necessary for our survival. So it's not even a for science sake and an esoteric thing out there, but it really is something that's relevant to all of us. So I applaud all those organizations doing that great work here in Ohio.
Got just 30 seconds. Can we do a better job, even in our elementary school, of starting to plant that seed that science might be a great career?
Absolutely. We can always do a better job. And just remember that children are born curious, and it's actually easy to keep them connected into being inquisitive, into wanting to ask questions, support them when they ask questions, even though sometimes you think it's a pain in the butt. That's the route to science, and just keep doing it. And you know, things like this radio show are excellent to keep that message going.
Well, we'll be back to wrap up our conversation with the president and CEO of COSI, Dr. Frederick Burtley, and with Adam Sharp of Ohio Farm Bureau. We'll do that right after this.
When you dream, dream big, as big as the ocean blue. When you dream, it might come true. When you dream, dream big.
Welcome back to Town Hall, Ohio. The gentleman on our show today is a big dreamer. He sees a better world for all of us, and science can help us get there. Dr. Frederick Burtley, president and CEO of the Center of Science and Industry. Adam Sharp agrees with Frederick a lot on these issues, and he is our executive vice president of the Ohio Farm Bureau Federation. So to close us out, Frederick, big picture, science, good. We have very capable practitioners of it. What should we be throwing that scientific muscle at? What are some of the big picture things that need fixed?
The National Academy of Engineers, which are the top engineers of the country, came out with 14 grand challenges in 2000. These are things like clean air, clean energy, cyberspace. There are 14 challenges that we need to solve and to use. I love how you put it. Throw the big science machine at it to try to solve. The top three for me would be energy. And in particular for the ag community, I mean, energy is an important point. And I'd love to hear you, Adam, talk a little more about that. But also clean water tied to energy and everything else. And finally, something that in the U.S. we're not really worried about yet, but it's coming, and that's clean air. I mean, I spent a lot of time going to overseas, and you have, you know, countries like China with 1.4 billion people with a huge subset of folks walking around with a mask because they actually don't have access to clean, breathable air. So air, water, and energy are three, you know, big things that I would throw our muscle at.
So the whole energy thing for farmers, both as producers and consumers of energy, Adam.
That's right. And, you know, energy, water, air, you know, right now in Ohio, one of the biggest things we're talking about is it's a twofer. It's cleaning up our water and improving the way we produce our food. So the science challenge, the dynamic challenge right now that we're investing an enormous amount in the agriculture community is nutrient management in Ohio. So making sure that we're improving Lake Erie, we're improving the Ohio River and our lakes across the state. Through nutrient management technology and developing new science right now with Ohio State University and many other great partners on the ground, solving challenges. And that's critical. Same with energy, same with air quality. It's dynamic, and that's the fun part of science, right? It's solving problems in new and creative ways.
Absolutely.
So talk just real quick, Frederick, about that. One of the things that we talk about is in the water space or any of these environmental issues, the need to be cautious of unintended consequences. I mean, we could do some things on the farm that would, you know, we could never guarantee pristine water, but we could do some things that would help water, but would harm our capacity to produce food. Does science help us find that middle ground?
Absolutely, Joe. I mean, that's a great point. I mean, what science does is consider as your best toolkit, not a toolkit, but your best toolkit that could be most helpful at having you figuring out those tough issues where, you know, you want to move on one side to have clean water, but on the other side might impact, you know, growth and development capacity to go to scale. And so, but look at science, and I hope your listeners consider science as just that really top-notch toolkit that can best help you regardless of what decision ultimately you're going to make.
Science for, you know, for Ohio, for agriculture, for our food industry is absolutely critical. Solving those problems, finding those solutions. You know, it's interesting. I often joke a little bit about the food and ag world, and we talk about self-driving cars, right, and engineering and science. We've had self-driving tractors for over a decade in agriculture.
See, that's unbelievable. People need to understand that.
And that's because of, right, science and energy, the energy put into engineering development. Fascinating stuff. And just the other day, one of my good buddies was planting corn just south of Columbus here, and his father was out with a ruler measuring the distance between the rows because they were trying to make sure that the integrated scientific based farm system that they have that's part of their equipment was accurate. You know, it was supposed to be down within an inch or so of precision, and he was out there checking with a ruler to make sure that the science behind the engineering was accurate. That's what's fun.
So we got time for a 30-second commercial. Why should a family, when they're looking for something fun to do, put COSI on the visit list?
Because just like your last interlude, it was called Dream Big. It was a song about dreaming big. We have a movie in our Nat Geo Theater called Dream Big. It's the best example of getting kids excited. It goes till May 26th. So that's what COSI is all about. Come to COSI. You will experience an incredible suite of activities that will get you, your whole family, the little ones to the older ones, excited about why science, technology, engineering, and math is critical for making a healthy and better society for us all.
Welcome to Ohio, and thanks for taking time to join us on the show today.
Thank you for having me, Joe. Thank you so much for having me, Adam. This has been a pleasure.
Yeah, Dr. Frederick Burtley, President and CEO of the Center of Science and Industry, Adam Sharp of Ohio Farm Bureau. I'm Joe Cornelli. Thanks for joining us on Town Hall, Ohio.
Town Hall Ohio is a project of the Ohio Farm Bureau Federation and is brought to you with the support of Nationwide. Nationwide is on your side. Join us again next week for Town Hall Ohio.